Hello, and welcome to today's episode of the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. My name is Sarah Polinchek, and the title of today's show is Helping Children Deal with Fears and Anxiety.
And my name is John Summers Flanagan. I am Sarah's co-host. Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
And I'd like to say that this topic scares me a little bit.
You're just being cheesy.
Well, I'm being kind of cheesy, but I also feel scared every time we do a podcast. You know that. You know that sometimes I sweat a lot, and you can tell that I'm nervous.
Good thing we have to stand so close to each other.
I know.
I feel nervous too, though. You know, sometimes I'm afraid, but I do it anyway, like I'm standing here talking in front of people.
Right. I know. One thing that I think makes me more nervous than usual about this episode is I've worked with some people who have anxiety problems and fear or phobias, and I just know how painful and how paralyzing that kind of fear and anxiety can be. It's misery. It's miserable. And I would like to be of help, and I worry that maybe we won't be able to fix everybody's anxiety problems with this one podcast.
Wouldn't it be great if we could?
Yes, it would be.
But of course, it won't fix everyone's anxiety problems. That's one of the big truths on the planet. Anxiety is everywhere. So we don't fix it. We cope with it.
You are a genius,
Thank
Sarah
you.
Polinchek.
What did you say?
I said you're a genius, and I'm regretting it already.
So today, we're not fixing everything, but we're talking about parenting techniques, skills, and strategies for helping children cope with fear and anxiety, because it's always going to be out there in the real world.
All right.
Step one is for parents and caretakers to manage their own anxiety and negative expectations. If parents don't have and display confidence in their ability to face the stresses of life, their children might adopt a similar attitude of fear and low confidence.
Right. And so, as is often the case, good parenting starts with the parent and the parent dealing with his, her, their own issues around anxiety.
Right. And modeling that to the kids, right? So think about it. If parents role model fear without showing how we're coping, children are going to learn fear also.
Right. Makes perfect rational sense. But Sarah, let me ask you this. What if the parent has some serious anxiety problems? How can we expect them to put aside their own anxieties and role model calmness and confidence?
Yeah, that's a good question. Parents don't have to be perfect about this, right? They don't even have to be practically perfect. They just need to model developing a strategy for facing their fears and approaching their anxiety. So it's really just demonstrating that they're working through it and that they're trying.
Okay. I think I know what you mean. Tell me if this is consistent with what you're saying. Let's say I'm a parent and I had some bad experiences as a child in school. So I have uncomfortable and maybe even some anxieties about even going into the school. I might even say to my child, going to your parent-teacher conferences makes me feel uncomfortable. But, you know, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it as best I can because it's worth it. I value your education, and so I'm going, and I'm going to support that.
Right. So you're letting your kid kind of know what's going on inside of you.
Exactly.
So I am nervous about something. I'm a little uncomfortable, and I'm going to do it anyway. And I might even show them that, you know, one of the ways I'm going to cope is I'm going to kind of listen to a fun song on the way, on the car ride, on the way down there. So when we make that exercise for ourselves explicit to our kids, let them know what it is we're doing, that's just one way that we're really helping.
Yeah. So now we're going to, I think, talk about several strategies, right? And we're going to circle back a little bit later and talk about the common fears for children of specific ages, because fears are developmental.
Right. Sounds good.
Okay. So one thing, in addition to parents dealing with their own anxiety and modeling in a positive way a coping model for anxiety, in addition, parents can use storytelling. I know there are some really good story books out there that focus on fear. One that comes to mind to me is Where the Wild Things Are.
I remember Max. I love Max.
Well, good. And you probably remember that when you go through that book, at the end, you might be able to have a nice conversation with your child about how Max and how others might deal with fears.
Yeah.
And the point really is that the fears don't disappear, although sometimes they do, but that if we focus on problem solving and coping, preparing for the fear, and ask questions like, how do you suppose people manage to get over their fears? Then we're working in the right direction with our kids.
Right. And here's another idea that I think is really important, which is instead of dismissing fears or the feelings around those fears, to use soothing empathy. Mm-hmm. So for example, instead of minimizing a child's fears by saying something like, oh, it's silly to be afraid of dogs, that dog's not going to hurt you, parents might say something like, yeah, that is scary, and it's not fun to feel scared, is it? And have the conversation about the feeling instead of just dismissing and saying, oh, don't worry about that. It's not going to get you.
Yeah. It's no fun feeling scared, and yet we can still cope with it.
And acknowledge it.
And acknowledge it, yeah. So related to that, I think it's also important not only to acknowledge the fear, but also to show a little bit of curiosity. And we talk about gentle curiosity, maybe saying something like, you seem scared, you want to talk about it. And now I'm not saying we should go on and on and on talking about fears and fears and fears all the time, but I think some exploration with our children can give us a chance to understand their fears and where they're coming from a little bit more. It's really a respectful thing to do.
Yeah, agreed. You know, too much focus on fear is, right? Too much focus
too
on
much.
Fear.
Yeah.
But fear is normal. So we as parents should also provide comforting reassurance or universality, which just means that everyone is experiencing this feeling. It's all around us. So we should do that after using empathy and listening. So reassurance or universality might sound something like, you know, lots of people get afraid to swim, especially at first, and I can remember being really afraid to put my head underwater. You know, just making it a normal thing, so that especially so that a young kid doesn't think, well, there's something wrong with me because all these other kids are out there doing it.
Right. Yeah. I think that's a really good point, because that kind of thought can get in a child's head, can get in an adult's head. Like, there's something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else is swimming.
Yeah.
I'm afraid to put my head underwater. What's wrong with me? And then they come to that conclusion, there's something wrong with them. We don't want that. We want them to know, ah, it's common to feel that anxiety and that fear.
Mm-hmm.
Let's respect it.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's move toward it and try to work through it with a good plan.
Yeah. Another thing that parents can do is just offer that positive, optimistic encouragement. You know, one way that that might sound for a kid is to say something like, I know it's hard to be brave, but I know you can do it. And gosh, it's tricky sometimes to do that, but acknowledging those moments when our kids are brave, even when they're really small, can translate and help when they're doing a big thing. So for example, if a kid is trying a new food, gosh, you tried something new.
Yeah.
You were really brave.
Yeah.
You know, and you start using those sort of sentiments, then maybe if they are afraid to go into the water, it starts to just slowly translate into, okay, you were brave in that small example, and now here's a bigger example, and it helps. It doesn't fix it. It helps.
Right. And of course, none of these things fix anxiety and fear.
Right.
I think that's another great idea. I'm going to elaborate on that a little bit more when we get to the money portion of the show. So something
can't
to
wait.
Be looking forward to. So, but first let me ask you this. How long does it take for our children to overcome their fears?
Oh, John. Well, that's a silly question, I'm just going to say.
Okay.
So remember when we said at the beginning, our goal isn't to make fears go away. It's to help parents and children develop skills and strategies for facing their fears.
Ha ha. I knew that. I was just trying to be able to say this next tip.
Okay.
And that is because fears don't disappear quickly, although on occasion they will go away.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of weird. One of my grandchildren was like phobic of gloves.
Gloves?
I mean, gloves.
Oh, I love it. I love the new ones, one you've never heard of before.
Oh, I mean, it was a panic. And then one of my grandchildren was phobic of vacuum cleaners.
I've heard that one. At least.
Maybe kind of the noise and things are getting sucked up.
Yeah.
Anyway. I think the thing is that parents, in addition to all this, have to have and show enormous patience, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you might just feel like saying, hey, buddy, buck up and deal with it.
Right.
And that might sometimes work, but my concern is that the price of a traumatic memory around a deep fear makes the risk of that strategy not worth the cost.
Like when you're just forcing them to get over it.
You're just forcing them to get over it, and then that's a memory that sticks in their head, and they never get over it then.
Right. So remind me, we're talking about kind of forcing kids to get over it, but I have to tell you this, my kids' fears.
Okay.
That I was tempted to just force them
when
they were that. So both of them have this really big fear of sharks. So when they were younger, you know, and I think a lot of parents say, you know, we're in Montana. We don't often find sharks in Montana. Mm-hmm. But they really, you know, going down to our university pool for swim lessons, they were convinced that somehow someone would have planted a shark in there and that there would be one in there. And using all of the logic that I feel like I, it just didn't work. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that it's a temptation to, you know, sharks are not at the local swimming pool.
Yeah.
And to laugh and mock them. But I had to keep reminding myself, you're right, it does take a lot of patience because sharks are not in Montana.
What a terrible movie that would make.
Right? But you know what's funny is just the other night I was talking to my 14-year-old and he was describing dreams that he used to have that a helicopter would fly sharks in and drop them into Flathead Lake. And he had to force himself to get into the lake knowing that a helicopter may have just dropped a shark in there.
Hmm. Knowing.
So, it's an example where he fought through his fear, but they're so real for them at that age.
Yeah.
Is the whole point.
I mean, sharks really do not like chlorinated water that much.
And I told him that.
Sure. I'm sure you tried the rational persuasion technique, which is a natural thing for parents to try. And yet, I guess what we're saying is maybe it's going to be the 57th time that you need to encourage your child to get in the pool, even though he thinks, or your children think, that there are sharks in there.
Yeah.
And yet, you know, you kind of do that. You hold their hand, and yet you say, yeah, but we're still going swimming.
Going to swimming lessons. But can we be tough with our kids sometimes, you know? I mean, can't we tell them sometimes you just have to get with the program? We have to set reasonable limits, right, and say things like, okay, even though you're scared of monsters, sometimes you still have to be brave and go to bed.
Right, even though you're scared of sharks in the pool, you still have to go to swimming lessons.
Yeah, exactly.
And absolutely. I think being firm, I just had a parent tell me about taking her teenage son to the dentist. He has terrible dental phobia. And she did lots of things to support and comfort him, but never was you don't have to go to the dentist even on the table.
Right.
Right. And so that's a good example for me of a parent who, it was clear, you're going to the dentist, you're getting this procedure done, now how can we help you go there? And then she celebrated with him afterwards in a way that I just loved hearing. I think they went out and had some food and they just...
A bunch of sugar.
Probably. I don't know what they had, but they had a good time and they both recognized his success.
Great. And I'm thinking about, you know, if I had succumbed to my kids' fear of sharks with regard to the swimming lessons, it would have just reinforced to them that there's something to be afraid of, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so we just have to be careful. It's that delicate line. So sometimes we just need to model how to sit with and sit through the fear.
Mm-hmm.
So one thing that's always true is when fear is big, it will always get smaller eventually. So saying something like, hey, let's sit here together and watch our fear go away. Let's pay attention to what makes it get smaller, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I can imagine you using funny stories or deep breathing or any one of a number of strategies to help that fear start to get smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
And watching it as it does.
Yeah.
And again, you know, one of the basic principles of psychology is avoid avoidance. Because if you avoid the thing that you're afraid of, whether it's the dentist or sharks in the pool or whatever it might be, the dog down the street, you give that thing power over you. And then you reinforce the process and it becomes more and more reinforcing to avoid it because you feel better.
Right.
Facing it almost always the right thing to do. So one last idea before we move on to the common fears for different ages is to plan and model anxiety management skills. And by that I mean deep breathing, progressive muscle relaxation. We've talked about some of these things off and on our podcast. I think finding some skills and techniques that you can practice with your child and say something like, okay, we're feeling a little nervous. Let's sit here together and count our breaths just one after another and see if we can slow down our heart rate and see if we can calm down our bodies just a little bit. And I think eventually if you practice those things together, sometimes you hit some bumps in the road, but you can usually lower your physiological arousal and your parasympathetic nervous system can kick in and help calm you down.
And even if it doesn't work right then in the moment and get rid of the fear, which again, that's not the goal, what a lifetime skill to be learning, right?
Yeah.
To feel like, oh my gosh, I'm about to confront something that scares me and, ooh, I've got some tools.
Yes.
So, yeah. So, John, what do we mean by common childhood fears?
Well, by common, what we mean is that it's not unusual for certain children or for all children of a certain age to have fears around certain themes or objects. So, for example, toddlers, preschoolers are often afraid of the dark, mm-hmm. afraid of strangers, afraid of dogs, thunder,
being
other
alone.
Loud noises like the vacuum,
yep.
being alone,
mm-hmm.
ghosts, monsters under the bed,
yep.
those kinds of things. Now, most of those fears will resolve by age 8 or 9, but some of those things can actually keep going depending on whether they get reinforced or not.
Yeah, I just have to go back to the shark thing.
Yeah.
My kids were 12 and 13, but it's because they reinforced the fear to each other. So they'd be out swimming in the lake and one of them would yell, "Shark!" It was horrible. Like, so anyway, so that's just an example where you can make it worse. And
sure.
they did for each other, so it lasted a little longer.
You can make it, you can kind of prolong it. Make it last longer.
Yeah.
And I don't know. Usually when those kinds of things keep going.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe they were getting some kind of positive out of it one way or another.
Well,
maybe
the one who was yelling shark was getting a lot of positive out of it. Yeah.
Okay.
So for the elementary school years, typically supernatural fears like, zombies, ghosts, movie characters, fears of bodily injury, bullies, fears of being alone. These also typically resolve by age 12 to 13, but exposure to specific events can, like we're saying, can prolong those fears.
Like a specific event of watching too many zombie movies?
Exactly.
You know,
yep.
When I was a kid, I never had a fear of zombies.
Well, that's the current 2018 fear.
Because there really weren't too many zombies around.
Right.
Now there are a lot of them. So for middle schoolers, the fears are usually around things like school performance, especially tests for some kids,
mm-hmm.
physical appearance, accidents, death is another fear. Humiliation and social rejection starts to become something that is sort of really, really scary.
Yeah, that stays big for a while.
And I think the fact that pimples and things like that start during the middle school years is just sort of unfair. It's just a cruel thing. I remember, having my worst day ever in high school when I had a really big zit. And I was so angry at the world and at my face.
Out to get you.
Oh, it was so bad. Anyway,
yeah.
That doesn't seem fair.
It's not.
But speaking of high school, what do you think? What about high school kids?
Well, in my opinion, high school kids aren't afraid of the things they should be afraid of. And that's the problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's mostly the social stuff for high school kids. Yeah. But they are now in a different developmental stage where they can say, oh, there really aren't sharks in the lake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's good. Mm-hmm. That's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
But, I think you're right. I think that the social fears dominate so much for high school age mm-hmm. that a lot of the kids are just all so universally in it. They're not even really aware of the social fear and anxiety. They're just sort of in this lockstep. We're going to respond. We're going to dress a certain way. We're going to make sure that my hair is right mm-hmm. and that I don't smell bad. I mean, they're just all so focused on those things. I'm going to say the right things. I'm going to be cool. I'm going to be funny. I'm going to say the funny things that everybody else says. Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
Yeah.
It's hard. I watch it every day. It's hard. It's uncomfortable to even watch high school kids have to go through the world sometimes.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
It's money time.
Okay, good. This is exciting.
Yeah.
I'll
do you
go
have
first.
A favorite tip?
Yeah. In thinking about this, there is so much that I think younger kids especially are exposed to
mm-hmm.
that is newer for today's kids that wasn't here 10, 15, 20, when we were kids. The access to things that are truly scary is much bigger.
Mm.
I think we have to be really aware that the things that kids are hearing on the news and that they're seeing on phones and in movies hits them and lands in their little bodies a lot different than it does for us, because we might be afraid of things that are happening in the world, but at least we've got the ability to, use our adult minds to kind of rationalize it. Sometimes we can. It's just scary.
Right.
But for younger kids, that can be really overwhelming, and I think we can't underestimate how significantly that could be impacting all the things they're afraid of.
Yeah, yeah. So not surprising that you're saying this, but I hear you kind of saying manage media a little.
Mm-hmm. I am saying that.
Yeah. Because yeah. Media can be a trigger for lots of fears and anxieties.
Definitely. And we might not recognize it really clearly, like, oh, you overheard that news program and mm-hmm. now you're afraid of tsunamis, right? Mm-hmm. It might just be that, gosh, it's a buildup of things that they're hearing over time, and there's a general anxiety that's just building up in our kids, and we might not be able to, you know, connect the two things so directly, but we have to just be careful.
Right, yeah. Right. Yeah, I think that's great advice. I think, you know, we want to be really careful with the media that is affecting our kids.
Yeah.
So one money tip I've got, it's kind of subtle, it's kind of not, and that is, I think that we need to not only encourage our kids to face their fears, but we need to show confidence in their ability to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And I worry sometimes that the fears that parents have about their children leak out and get on or in their children.
Ooh.
You know what I'm saying?
I think you might be looking at me because I am so aware of myself doing that.
Yeah.
I'm really aware of that. You know, one of the things that I do that I think is so brave of is I let my kids leave the front door every day. And I'm one of those people that I do have a lot of fear, but I have to actively work to think about what's reasonable. You know, I make sure mm-hmm. they wear their seatbelts. I, you know, but
sure.
I could get really carried away, and I want to make sure my fear isn't translating onto them irrationally.
Yeah. And I think sometimes if your fear as a parent gets on the child,
mm-hmm.
sometimes it functions not for them to just really just absorb your fears. It also diminishes their confidence in their ability to deal with it, right?
Right.
Because if you never let your kids go out of the house, then their interpretation might be, well, my mom doesn't think I can handle it.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I've had lots of self-checks over the years about that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was not actually thinking of you when I offered that money tip.
Oh, I'm just paranoid now.
Okay. All right. How about resources?
You know, John, my resource
mm-hmm.
is us.
Wow.
I'm going to direct our listeners back to an episode that we did on coping strategies
mm-hmm.
because I think all of those coping strategies, I remember that we talked about specific ways of breathing and doing that for ourselves and mm-hmm. for our kids, and I think a review of that might be really helpful.
All right. So maybe if we also made a recommendation in that episode for another podcast, basically people could be just circling
yep.
back and listening to podcasts
yep.
over and over again. And
they just need us.
That's
yep.
it. Well, one other promotion of us is to go to johnsummersflanagan.com because I will post some things on children's fears and anxieties there.
Yeah.
In addition, I found a cool book.
Oh.
It's by a woman named Jill Jones called Kids Learn Dog Behavior.
Nice.
It's got a dog.
Yeah.
It features a dog that realizes that some children are afraid of dogs, and so the dog is then teaching children about dogs,
mm-hmm.
which I think is kind of a clever idea, and it gets at something with littler kids where I think the more kind of normal exposure you can give them to things that they're afraid of, the better. And bibliotherapy or reading books is one of the ways that we can do that.
Well, and we already mentioned how helpful it can be just to tell stories about
right.
other people having fears and overcoming them. And I like it, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, my main surprise for today is that your special tip didn't have to do with getting more sleep.
Right. Well, that's just everyone knows that by now.
Okay. All right, it's time for us to close. And so in closing, I want to say thank you, Sarah, for being the co-host. And thanks to the Engelhardt Foundation for supporting these podcasts. Thanks also to NPEN.org, NPEN.org, the National Parenting Education Network. They also support us. And also the Department of Counselor Education at the University of Montana. Thanks to them, too.
All right. Great. Thanks, John. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Engelhardt Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.